Look for the slightest bit of revulsion, but none is there. Yet. Nearly everything, I blurt out. His eyes are steady. Enough that I'm illegal. Very illegal. According to the point schedule Alice told me about, I could be illegal 5 times over. His eyes falter, and I feel everything in me cave. I pull my hands loose. So that's why my grandmother doesn't want me to see you. She's trying to spare you, not me. By her own words, she doesn't know what to make of me. Neither do I, except that I'm some kind of freakish monster. Ethan walks away. He comes back, his hands jammed into his pockets. He stares at me. His face is stiff, frightening. I feel weak. What have I done? I should have kept quiet. Listen to Mother. To Lily. I want to take back every word, but it's too late. His soft brown eyes have turned to icy beads. All his warmth is gone. I nearly killed a man, Jenna, he says. Some people called me a monster for hitting him with a bat, even after he was unconscious. But I never felt like a monster. I barely remembered doing it. Something inside me snapped. Sweat spreads across his face, even though the day is cool. His confession runs out in choppy breaths, on the heels of mine, like they're linked. The guy was a dealer. He gave my brother HCP. My brother was only 13 at the time, Jenna. He didn't know anything about anything. So I went after the dealer. When they sentenced me, they said they couldn't tolerate people out there like me, trying to wield their own form of law enforcement. Vigilante justice, they called it. It wasn't justice. This guy's free, and my brother's hooked. He's been in and out of rehab ever since. He pauses and draws in a long, shaky breath. So I know what a monster is, Jenna, and it's not me. And it's not you. His voice is choked. It's like my fear exposed his own. I slide my arms around his back and hold him, strumming the knots of his spine and the blade of his shoulder, weighing the events that have made us both who we are now. His lips nestle close to my ear, and I feel his labored breaths on my skin. Don't tell Alice, he finally whispers. About you? He holds me tighter. No, about you. Would they ask that of someone who was real? There were no days. There were no nights. 18 months was nothing. And it was eternity. 16 years of thought trapped in circuitry. A spinning glass ball. Shattering inward. Moment by airless moment. But everyone says, don't tell. How can I not? A science lesson. Catch up, Dane! I hear the bite in Ray's voice. Her seemingly endless smile and patience must have its own invisible boundary. Dane flashes a smile from the top of the ravine and nods, but his face goes instantly expressionless when she turns away. I've heard about sociopaths, people who connect with no one but themselves and their own self-interests. That would be Dane. I walk next to Alice as we make our way to a creek bed for our outdoor science and ethics session. Alice chose the site, which surprises me. She walks down the incline without her braces. You're doing better, I say.
Yes, the new software was the match, right on target. They said it would take a few weeks, and here it is, 3 weeks later. It's reduced the phantom pains, too.
That's wonderful, she shrugs.
Not the real thing, though. It never will be. It's the patch, that's all.
You're bitter?
She stops to rest and smiles at me. I think of the time she told me, I like you, Jenna. Her face is soft like that right now.
Do I seem bitter? She asks.
I hope not. Not that there aren't days, but I'm trying to channel that bitterness into determination. Maybe I can make a difference for someone else, that's all.
By volunteering in the ethics office?
Yes, I guess so. I want to make sure science is held accountable in the future, so others won't have to go through what I've been through. But I'm grateful for these.
She gestures with her prosthetics.
Truly, I am. They aren't perfect, but none of us are ever exactly what we want to be, right?
Right, I answer.
When I was going through my bitter phase, my counselor told me we're all products of our parents, genes, or environment in one way or another.
She begins walking again.
And I may wish I could change the hand I was dealt, but I can't. So all I can do now is choose how I will play it. So that's what I'm doing, playing it the best I can.
Dane, Ray calls.
An unenthusiastic coming is heard from above.
Speaking of genes and a bad hand, Alice says, glancing over her shoulder and rolling her eyes.
I stop and grab her arm, jerking her to a halt.
I like you, Alice. She looks at me, a wrinkle running across her forehead.
I like you too, Jenna, she says slowly.
Ethan is already below, sitting on a rock by the creek. I can see his warning look.
I look back at Alice. I just wanted to tell you, I say. It's important that you know.
Sure, she answers. She tags on an awkward smile.
I am an oaf. My timing is off, but I had to get it out. Some things you have to tell, no matter how stupid they may sound. Some things you can't save for later. There might not be a later.
We arrive at the creek in the scattering of boulders that will be our classroom. Ray is there for support, but Alice is teacher collaborator for this session. Dane finally arrives and sits on a nearby swooping oak branch rather than join the covey of boulders we sit on. Ray wears hiking boots and blue jeans. They fit her better than the suits she usually wears. I look at my own clothes, the simple shirts and slacks provided by Claire. Light blue, dark blue. They have the personality of a slug.
You can hear from there, Dane?
Ray asks.
Perfectly, he answers,
then adds his trademark soulless smile.
Alice begins her discussion with some review of the manipulation of the BT bacterium to create pest-resistant crops and the introduction of transgenic animals into the food supply decades ago.
Of course, at the time, all of these breakthroughs seemed like a good thing, especially from an economic standpoint.
We had to hike all the way down here to hear this, Dane groans.
What's the matter? Had to break a sweat? Gabriel shoots back.
I'm surprised. Gabriel avoids confrontation.
Maybe like Ray, he has a boundary too, and it's been crossed too many times.
Dane stares at Gabriel but doesn't respond. No expression on his mouth or in his eyes. A dead look. It's more disturbing than a glare. It's impossible to know what he's thinking.
I know you have the patience of a rapidly decomposing turd, Dane, but I will get to my reason for meeting here. Not that I need one. Sunshine is plenty for most people.
Alice adjusts her position on a rock, unaware of how much satisfaction she has brought to Ethan and Gabriel, maybe even Ray.
Before the FSEB stepped in to regulate science labs, bioengineered plants and transgenic animals were being introduced into the food chain at the rate of dozens of species a year. Since these pose no direct health concern to humans, the FDA was approving these introductions at an alarming pace. But
I know where she's going. I shouldn't interrupt, but my mouth is speaking before I can decide not to.
But no one looked at the effects of these new species intermingling with native populations? That's the danger, isn't it?
Exactly, she answers.
They didn't even consider the possibility.
That's why regulation is key.
To make sure we don't produce any lab monsters, I offer.
Ones that might get out in the world and taint the original species, is that what you mean? Ethan stands and leaps to an adjacent rock to get my attention. He wants me to shut up. Do Alice and my secret frighten him that much?
Well, Jenna, she answers, I'm not sure taint is quite the right word. It's more like making sure native populations aren't put at risk. It's already too late for so many species, which is why the work of the Federal Science Ethics Board is so... Ethan leaps to another rock, his hands flying over his head at the same time.
But that's the sticking point, isn't it, Alice? Even the FSEB has its share of scandal. Payoffs, conflict of interests, sleeping with...
Ethan, what federal agency doesn't have its problems? All the things you're mentioning were early in its history.
Ray watches intently. She seems gratified that a simple science lesson has turned unexpectedly passionate.
Besides, Alice continues, those issues have been worked out, and now, without their careful monitoring, who knows what labs would be unleashing on the world?
I stand. Probably a lot of illegal things, I say. Freakish things. I walk toward Alice. Dangerous things. The freakish me, my delivery, my timing, everything about me, off. Different. Unleashed.
Right, Alice says.
She stares at me, quiet, wondering at my opinion, or my awkward stance, or the fact that I'm only an arm's length away, meeting her stare. Her mind is racing. What is wrong with Jenna Fox? Something is different. She senses it. I can see it in every eyelash, every contraction of her pupil. She is searching, trying to fill the gaps between her own synapses. Am I really that different from her? Time is suspended. I can feel the breath of Ethan, Ray, and Gabriel held between us.
Why are we here?
Dane's voice cuts through. Alice turns to face Dane. She spits her words out at him.
A short 40 years ago, you hopeless moron, you would have been underwater. Look at the top of this ravine. This was once a river. In just 40 short years, thanks to transgenic intervention and its domino effects, this tributary has become a mostly dry creek bed. So that's why we're here, Dane. End of lesson.
I look at the sparse trickle. I look at the dry boulders. I look at what science has done. To me, to the ravine, and finally, to Alice. Yes. End of lesson. Red. My fingers brush along the hangers in my closet. First my shirts, then my pants. All varying shades of blue. Sturdy. Neat. Functional. None with a fraction of the flair that I saw in Ray's clothes. These have no personality at all. Even Gabriel, who wants to fade into the background more than any of us, looks like a strutting peacock compared to me. Yesterday, when we climbed back out of the ravine, Dane and Gabriel were the last ones out. No one saw what happened. Dane claimed he lost his footing, but it was Gabriel who went down. His shirt was nearly ripped off his back. Back in the car, Gabriel fumed. He knew it wasn't an accident, but all he said was, "This was my favorite shirt." My favorite shirt. It struck me then. I don't have a favorite shirt. And now, suddenly, it seems so very important. I pull out two shirts and compare them. There's no reason to like one more than the other. They almost look like lab attire. The only thing I like is the color. A memory catches me. Kara and I are shopping on Newberry Street, running in and out of tiny shops on a rainy spring day. We finally hunker down in our favorite. Kara chides me.
Jenna, I refuse to allow you to buy another blue skirt. Your whole closet is blue.
My favorite color was blue, and Kara's favorite color was red. Claire may have had to choose my clothes hastily, or maybe she chose them because they wouldn't draw attention, but at least she tried to get a color she knew I liked. But that day was almost 2 years ago. Kara tucked me into the red skirt. She was right. It was a change I needed. What happened to that red skirt? Couldn't Mother have packed my clothes and brought them from Boston? Or maybe that was part of the secret. A gravely ill, bedridden Jenna would have no use for short red skirts or floppy flowered hats or jewel-trimmed blouses,
and that invalid picture had to be preserved for prying eyes. Besides, a new, improved, and shorter Jenna would need new pants anyway, ones that wouldn't drag and reveal her lost 2 inches. I ache for that red skirt now, and I ache for the day I bought it with Kara. Sliver.